So we were a bit late.
Yeah, we were totally late.
Yeah.
Had to. It's just been one of those weeks.
Life.
And we're renovating at the moment as well.
Renovations and
life. We haven't told you guys that, have we? We're renovating.
Oh, boy. Oh
my God.
Less said about that right now, the better.
Okay, it's bringing us closer together as a couple.
You keep making block references and I just keep staring at you.
You're Ronnie, I'm Georgia. No, actually, no, we're Hint. Oh, Hint. Clint and Hannah, I think we are. I'm Hannah, who's Clint. They were a lovely couple.
I don't like reality TV.
I do. Portrait.
I think this is
had to suffer all the way through the block. It was hilarious.
I think it's time to actually talk history. What do you think?
Yes.
Woo.
Yes. And not the demise of our relationship, which it can happen when you're renovating. Our relationship isn't history.
No, it's not.
But we're going to talk about history.
We will. Because history is awesome. What the? Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, mm-mm, What the History. I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Oh, the laughing fairy Susie Holland.
So if you want to be a fairy, that's fine.
I'd like to be a fairy.
Yes.
Or a butterfly.
It all works.
With glitter. Lots of glitter.
Pretty glittery wings.
Prettery what?
Yeah, I can't word. That's not a good sign. So let's get on and okay. Say, hey, what do you have for us tonight, Susie?
All right. Okay, let's bring it on. The name is Bond. James Bond. One of the most iconic lines ever uttered by an actor is our favourite spy, James Bond 007, unleashed on the world by author, journalist and former British naval intelligence officer Ian Fleming in 1953, with the publishing of his first novel to feature James Bond, which was Casino Royale, it set the scene for the fast-living spy who had a weakness for cars, women, intrigue, and shaken, not stirred martinis. But have you ever wondered where Fleming got the idea for his character? Well, wonder no more, dear listeners. Here comes the story of at least one of the inspirations for 007, one Mr. Dusku Popov. Born in Serbia in 1912 to a wealthy family, Popov was brought up in privilege and received a prestigious education and graduated with a law degree. At the beginning of World War II, Popov was a Yugoslav intelligence officer who was recruited by Germany's intelligence organization, Abwehr, and gained their trust to be a Nazi spy on the Allies and given the code name of Ivan. What they didn't know was Popov disliked Nazis, so he offered his services to the Allies and was recruited by MI5, some sources say MI6, some say he worked for both, and after gaining their trust as well, he was given the code name of, wait for it, Tricycle. In 1941, Fleming was also an intelligence officer for the Director of Naval Intelligence and was discreetly accompanying Popov to the Casino Estoril in Lisbon, Portugal, at the behest of MI6. Here Fleming witnessed firsthand Popov's skill at gambling when he used $40,000, in today's money that is actually $1.3 million, of British government money to win baccarat. The casino went silent, Fleming turned green with the amount of money on the table, and Popov's opponent withdrew. Inspiration struck Fleming, who would start writing the James Bond books after the war, the first one, like I said, being Casino Royale, based on the Casino Estoril. Being a double agent suited Popov and MI5/MI6 just fine, and the Germans would ask for British intelligence information, and Popov would hand the Germans back a bunch of misinformation. While Germany and Britain thought Popov was fantastic, there was one person who didn't think he was all that wonderful, and that was the director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover. He didn't like Popov's style of womanizing and appeared apparently from out of nowhere. And when Popov attempted to tell Hoover that the Germans wanted to know about the naval defenses at Pearl Harbor for an attack by the Japanese, Hoover dismissed Popov as a distrustful foreigner and shouted at him, saying, and I quote, "You come here from nowhere and within 6 weeks install yourself in a Park Avenue penthouse, chase film stars, break serious law, which was the Mann Act, and try to corrupt my offices. I'm telling you right now, I won't stand for it. End quote. Go Hoover.
He was
a bit of a feisty one.
Indeed.
As an aside, the Mann Act was a law prohibiting the trafficking of white women across the state lines for sex. The woman concerned was reportedly a British citizen and a consenting adult. Popoff replied, and again I quote, "I brought you a serious warning indicating exactly where, when, how, and by whom your country is going to be invaded and attacked." End quote. Not long afterwards, on December 7th, 1941, Japan invaded Pearl Harbor, bringing the U.S. into the Second World War. Popoff concluded that his mission to the U.S. was a failure, but he still used German Nazi money to party with women in the ski resorts, and when Hoover found out that Popoff was still in the country, he threatened to have him arrested if he didn't leave at once. God. I don't think that he liked him at all.
No.
One of the most important contributions Popoff made being a double agent was the landing of the Allied troops in Normandy for D-Day in 1944. Popoff told the Germans that the Allies would invade Europe in Calais, while the Allies made their entrance in Normandy, which gave them the advantage. The Germans never suspected that Popoff was a double agent, and post-war awarded him the Iron Cross for his efforts, and Britain awarding him the Order of the British Empire after the war, making him the only ever dual recipient. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Post-World War II, Popoff told people what he got up to. The women, the secrets, the parties, the money, and being a double agent. He passed away in 1981, leaving us to say, what the history.
Wow.
I like this guy.
This guy certainly had something going for him, that's for sure.
I really liked him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what it would have been if the Germans actually got the right information?
Hmm.
My goodness, it would have been a real mess.
Yeah. A
bigger mess than it was.
Very true.
Go Popoff. I think you rock.
Indeed. And speaking of something that got into a bit of a mess.
Nice segue.
That was really forced.
Nice.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Okay. We all know the tales.
Yes.
A city, once a hive of civilization and prosperity, that sank into the waves never to be seen again. A lost city with its own legend and folklore handed down through generations. Add some seafaring tales of evidence of its existence, and a number of expeditions to find it, and I am sure you will guess what I'm talking about. Yep, the lost city of Dunwich in Britain. It's also known as Britain's Atlanta, so if you said the other place, well, you're half right. If you visited Dunwich today, you would not think it was once a very important city. The current area has a population of about 84, and is considered a quaint little fishing village with a pebbled beach. The only sign of what it once was is the remains of a medieval friary that hints at its past. If you talk to the fishermen, they will happily tell you that on quiet nights, you can hear the sounds of church bells ringing from a church long lost to the waves. Obviously, this talk wasn't taken seriously for many years, and efforts to verify the claims were not undertaken until 1970. Diving teams were hampered by poor visibility, made worse by constant clouds of silt, but did find evidence of masonry at the bottom of the bay. They persisted, and after close to 10 years of meticulous searching and mapping, they had found the remains of two churches, large sections of wall, several other buildings, and even a bridge. In 1979, a book was published called The Search for Dunwich City Under the Sea, which became the first comprehensive look at the history of the submerged town since an account was written by Thomas Gardner in 1754. A truly detailed picture of Dunwich was not put together until 2008, when archaeologists started using sonar technology to create a 3D model of the murky depths. By 2013, they had identified what they believed were five separate churches, the town hall, and the city limits. To the northern end of the sunken town, they found evidence of wooden structures indicating where Dunwich's once busy port used to be. So what happened to the city, once considered the capital of the Saxon kingdom of East Anglia? Throughout the 12th and 13th century, Dunwich was a vital port city. Its harbour not only providing a boon for commercial trade, it was also in a highly strategic location. Ships were constructed and fitted there that ended up being used to help King John enforce the terms of the Magna Carta when the barons who did not want to comply with the agreement enlisted the help of the French. The city was already in trouble well before this. Its harbour may have been in a great position, with evidence the area had been inhabited since the Iron Age, but it was also hit regularly by storms. Big ones. By 1066, it is estimated nearly half of the farmland in the area had been lost due to surging tides and coastal erosion. In 1286, things got super serious. Dunwich was hit by a violent storm that lasted 3 days. It devastated the town and even blocked the mouth of a nearby river. It is believed that vicious storms hit the area at least once a year, hampering recovery efforts and causing greater damage and erosion, with the coastline receding approximately 1 meter every year. The biggest blow came in 1328, when a storm hit that swept away coastal villages in the area and caused a shift in the coastline that left Dunwich Harbour blocked off and it quickly silted up. At this point, many survivors left the town, which was slowly but steadily being claimed by erosion and the encroaching sea. The last major building of the once great city, the Church of All Saints, sat precariously on a cliff edge before finally being completely claimed by the ocean in the 1930s. It is amazing that a city so important and vibrant for so long can be claimed in such a relatively short space of time. Even more, that despite the evidence of its existence, it wasn't fully mapped until just 4 years ago. I think this shows there is still much exploration to be done and plenty more examples of what the history to be discovered.
That's right. A metre every year.
That's just insane.
That's massive.
And it's still going on, apparently. There's just like massive erosion along that part of the British coast.
Oh, those poor 84 people.
I think the current village is well back from the, the coastline. Right.
look up the map.
Yeah, there is an interesting map that shows the coastline over like various time frames, and it's just amazing when you look at it, just going, really?
Britain's own Atlantis.
Absolutely. And so, I hope...
We love it here at What the History.
We do. And we hope you're loving the history too. If you do want to know more about what we've discussed, there are references in the podcast description just down below that you can click on and find out more.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to find out more about us, you can head to our homepage, WTHpod.roofersproject.com, where you'll find all our previous episodes and associated references there as well. You can leave comments on the episodes. You can get in touch with us by finding the What the History podcast Facebook page.
Yay!
Or finding pod underscore what on Twitter. Even use the hashtag WTHpod. We'll try to keep trying to make that a thing. We'll get there. And if you want to send us an email, we are at WTHpod@RufusProject.com. So we'd love to hear from you. It'd be super duper cool.
So would our mascots, Felix the Kakapo and Lucy the Puppy.
Absolutely. It's not a real Kakapo though.
No, it is not. He's a beautiful stuffed one. Everyone's seen him.
Yes, I know. Check out our videos on the Facebook
page. Check out our videos.
Photos. He features quite a bit usually.
Yeah, because he's gorgeous.
He is.
Love him.
He is great.
And Lucy loves being my little research buddy and
oh, very very cool. Now, important announcement time. As we know, we are heading into what is known as the silly season. So this is the second last episode for this year for What the History.
Yeah, guys, even us, we need holidays too.
Podcasters need a break too.
Gosh, yes.
Really.
I haven't talked so much in such a long time.
We are looking at...
Jack doesn't say anything there.
We are looking at potentially doing a bit of a bit more of a fun special episode next time. It's still in the works. So definitely, it will be fun. It will be feisty. It will be festive.
Festive. I thought you were going to say it was going
to
be festy.
I almost did say it was going to be festy. But yeah, we will.
This is fun.
We will definitely be back in a couple of weeks' time.
We will.
With some more cool stuff to make you say, what the history? Catch you
good
then.
Good night, everyone. Bye.
Bye.